shoots an old coyote howling all night long.
And welcome back to KPFK Matters. We've got a number of callers who are calling in. I want to let you know that we won't be screening listener calls. Some listeners have complained that waiting on hold is unfair to those who cannot afford the long-distance charges. And so we're just going to let the phones ring without being answered so that when the line is picked up, you are on the air. We're not going to be asking your name. We're not going to be putting you in a certain order. I'm just going to be taking the phone lines in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 order. Again, the number to call is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We're going to turn first to line 1. Line 1, you're on the air. Oh. Okay, line 1 is gone. Line 3, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Yes, hi, how are you? You're on
okay,
KPFK Matters.
I have quickly read the Fertig proposal, and I wrote up four quick questions. First question concerning, quote, what I call, quote-unquote, blackmail of the station manager. Suppose one big-shot programmer becomes an officer of the corporation has so much power, or thinks she has so much power, that her influence can, quote-unquote, blackmail the station manager and when ideas of her program, his or her program, come up. So you may have to think about that. For example, on a school system, a school teacher on a school system board. Okay, second, only one employee or programmer on the lab should be allowed to be elected to the national board. You have station members of the national board, but how about the station members on the lab that are automatic or that may be elected to the national board? So that's a double pick. And then third, union reps or his designations on the lab. Okay, the unions have powers and whatnot, and should the station person have something to do with the union or not or whatever? Fourth, I support the election by all of the members of all the stations of the chairman of the national board. So those four comments I had to quickly going through Dave Fertig's presentation. And they talk about that.
Well, Ed, I hear what you're saying. I think that in the event any one person on a national board or a local board or a station board or whatever starts throwing the weight around, they should have their chain pulled, man. There's no question about it. And that is a very important issue in relation to considering the ability to recall somebody. And I take to heart the concerns that it need to be done easily enough, but not so easily that it on a whim. But there needs to be that accountability. You're absolutely right. As far as whether somebody's on two boards, you know, if you're on the national board and you're on the local station board, you're still no less. In fact, you're perhaps even more accountable because you can have your leash pulled, so to speak, from three different directions. Indeed, as Dave Adelson mentioned earlier, if it's done under a transparent environment, then such arrogance will be quickly addressed. And by the way, on the thing of a nationally elected chair, I find that impractical on a number of levels and undesirable. I think that it's important when you have a person elected to a board, they be people that have demonstrated their abilities to work amongst those with whom they're working. And I do believe that a nationally elected chair would become more of a political football than a process.
Does that answer your questions, caller?
Okay. Like I said, the only thing that I'd like to hear other people, you know, Carol and whatnot, to talk about the same items, too. But the only thing I'm thinking about is that undue influence by one programmer that happens to be a big shot, what I call blackmail, can be, you know, pushed almost to the point where she gets kicked off the board, but not quite. And I can see where that, like I said, she can influence the station manager detrimentally, such that the station manager doesn't get to do her job or his job.
So okay, I think we're going to move on to the next caller, and thank you so much. Line 5, you're on the air.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. Okay, well, thank you for, thank you, Dave and Carol, for the work you've done on the bylaws with Dave's concern about accountability and Carol's concern for democracy and liability, and especially democracy. I'm really proud of you. Just quickly, I wanted to talk about the mission statement and the problem of the staffers and the listeners. Now, I say a problem, and I don't know if I can really define what I mean, but I think it is. My experience is living far away. And when you came back, a couple of times I came to the station because of the pledge drive. And can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. And you had so many people on the phones, and there was so much going on. But we really weren't needed that day. And so I got to know people, staffers. I got to run around and eat a lot, and it was great. But and then I also came to a meeting, and I mean, I can't say that I'm that experienced, but my experience is being a listener mostly for decades. And what I have decided is that the staffers are a group. The listeners are isolated. And when you want something, for example, I called once to find out how one could talk to the new manager. Now, that was really impossible, but one could, and I don't have a computer, don't want a computer. And I found that probably writing would be the best thing, but a staffer that I really trust said no. Two or three or four different people open her mail, and she may never get it. So now, why would that be? Why wouldn't she get her mail? I mean, do you feel that the staffers have control, that the listeners don't have control, and I want you to take that into consideration. And the, as far as the mission statement, I feel that the programmers, as far as programmers, my feeling is that, example, this last 4 days, there were programmers on that are so hot to get an hour a day, their life on radio is how I saw it, that it's just, you know, they are not able to make decisions as far as what's going on, and they really don't have the listeners. They do in the fact that they want listeners. I understand that. But on the other hand, listeners, the isolated listener is, for example, I am really interested in politics. As Carol said, you know, the nation. I mean, the nation is a mess. We're led by inept, unbelievably evil people. And so that's why I have always actually listened to KPFK, even before the nation was such a mess. So think about those things. I'm glad you're here. And
caller, who would you like to
I'd like
answer
some feedback on what I've said.
Who would you like to direct your question to?
Anybody. It doesn't matter. Carol, start with Carol.
Sure. Hi. Well, hi. I think, and I know we're all striving to have listener-elected boards. That doesn't mean that the 100,000 listeners at KPFK will all be on the board. It means that representatives of various points of view will be on the board. And it's going to be their responsibility to tackle these very thorny issues of who gets on the air and how those decisions are made. I think they have to make them in collaboration with staff, and that staff have legitimate concerns about that, that we need to hear, and they need to hear from us. So I think if we have boards made up of two-thirds listeners and one-third staff, we'll be able to work it out. It won't be easy, however. It never has been. There are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and a lot of people who want and need airtime, and there's nobody who likes every program.
Let me ask you a question. How are people going to be elected to the board? Is it because they want to be on the board, or how is this happening, especially thinking of the people that live far away and just can't, you know, really get that involved?
Mm-hmm. Well, an election procedure, we've outlined one, would be that anyone who wanted to run could gather 20 signatures and run. They would put out a written statement of up to 500 words as to their views, and there would be airtime allotted for all of the candidates to be on the air as well. It will be a difficult decision for listeners to choose, but that's democracy in action, I guess.
Now, the 500 words that are sent to who?
All the subscribers.
Are sent
you
to
would receive it in writing with
mm-hmm.
your ballot.
Well, I guess my fear is that people who want to be on the board, because the majority of listeners can't be on the board. They're all over the place, right? So the people that are close by that want to be on the board and want to be badly on the board and know that maybe the way to get on is because maybe the nation is a mess and maybe politics is important. How are we going to know that those 500 words are really what they're about?
You can't.
Would there be someone maybe interviewing these people before they would be elected?
Caller, I would assume that people will be interviewed on the air and there'll be some process for that. I know that at the KPFA, at the station in Berkeley, that's the case. Dave Adelson, you were looking to respond to something the caller said.
Well, I wanted to point out that there's two different kinds of staff. There's on-air staff and the people behind the scenes, and I've noticed a difference in the way on-air staff versus the people really doing the work to serve the on-air staff conceptualize what's going on at the station. And it might be reasonable to think about whether you would have on-air staff present on local boards, but perhaps on the national board you would ask that it be the people who were not the on-air staff. You know, I don't know if that's something to consider to address one of the concerns that the caller brought up about both callers have brought up about the programmers who are popular, who have access to the air, becoming a dominant influence over the rest of the board.
Okay, caller, thank you so much. We're going to move on. Line 3, you're on the air.
That's me.
Yes.
Is that me? Okay, good.
Yes, it's you.
Yeah, there's a basic point that I want to make that has simply been almost completely ignored so far.
This Please go ahead.
The prominence of the staff and the talk about the prominence of the staff and no talk at all about the real role of the listener members. I'm talking about the listener sponsors. The fact is, and I've said this before, the listener sponsors are the employers of the station. They pay the salaries of the staff. They pay the operating expenses. But in fact, for 40 or 50 years, they have had the status of what used to be called, and I'm saying it politely, the house Negroes. I'm not using the word that was accurately used. That is to say, they have a few sort of privileges, but they are basically powerless, and they are not treated as if they are the employers, nor does what even Carol's plan and or Dave Ferdy's plan, change that. They still will be permitted to vote for the lowest level of elected officials, that is the local boards, and then the local boards proceed then to do all the other election. It is the same as if the state legislators for whom we vote then would pick our congresspeople and our senators and our president. That's a ridiculous arrangement, but that is what is being proposed. And it is extremely deceptive, and I know that most listeners don't understand that. It's very hard to follow all these intricacies. But why is it? I don't want to ask why. I say that fundamentally, all plans should change their direction because they are simply basically perpetuating with only a little change, not much of a change, no revolutionary change whatsoever, just a liberal tinkering of the present status. And now a point about staff. When I was a programmer many years ago, the choice of station manager was done differently. That is, the different elements of the station, the listeners, the staff and the board would meet in a single meeting and interview the three finalists. And then each of them would then convene separately and make a choice. That then, the consensus choice would be then forwarded on to the head of the national board, like a CEO, who would then ratify that choice properly or change it. However, what happened in one major election, both the board and the listener groups had one choice. The staff had a different choice. The staff's minority choice was sufficient to derail the process whereby there was a majority choice, another person. The staff didn't want that person. That person didn't get it because the staff was considered preeminent. Now, that's what the staff can do. That's what the staff did do and can do again. So I'm not saying, nobody is saying, Carol, and nobody is saying, Dave Fertig, that the staff shouldn't be part of matters. The point is how much of a part. It's not a matter of whether, but how much. And for the staff to be given so much of a priority, as compared to the listener, members, listener subscribers I'm talking about, who are the bosses, should be, but are not, who pay the salaries. Why are you allowing, why is there so little membership of that real, little mention of that real status of the listeners, which is, as I say and repeat, the employers of everybody else?
Dave Fertig, you want to take that?
Well,
incidentally, one more thing. Just want to say, before this particular, when this answer is finished, when this exchange is finished, is there not a meeting of the bylaw subcommittee this afternoon? If so, you ought to give the details.
There is indeed, and we'll do that.
Yes, 1:30 and 2:00 this afternoon.
Where?
At Loyola Student Union at the corner.
And say where that is, so the listeners can come if they want. Okay,
Rockfield,
go
ahead. That information right at hand.
No, I know how to get there, but I don't have the address.
Yeah, it's at the corner of
Albany and Olympic.
Albany and Olympic, a few blocks east of Hoover. On the north side, you go up Albany and there's parking. Anyway, at 2:00, 1:30 for orientation. You know, Paul, your concern, I mean, you characterize the sponsors as the employers. Would you characterize the sponsors as the owners as well?
The employers.
Well, I'm curious because, frankly, I think that there's a sense of proprietary ownership that does some people do seem to have relative to Pacific Elementary.
Well, I didn't say that's not my point.
I recognize that.
So I wish you would deal with my point, not a point that I didn't make.
Well, what I'm trying to
I'm not talking about ownership.
Address
I'm talking about bosses, employers.
Is this really an employer-employee relationship, or is it more of a collaborative relationship?
It's an employer relationship because we pay the wages and we pay the costs of operation.
Well, for the paid staff, that's correct. And for the unpaid staff, that's not. I think that there's a more complex dynamic than that, than to simply say that there are employers and employees and there's this formal relationship. It does exist, certainly, and we need to recognize that. And I think that's one reason why those individuals who do commit their livelihoods to the low-paying, rigorous work required of them in these stations and in this network have a right to have influence over the workspace.
There's no question about that, David. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have a place. I stipulated, yes, they belong, and they should have a place. The question is how much.
Well, and that's the point that we differ on.
If I could, Paul, the proposal that Carol has isn't quite as you characterized it. In that case, the listeners are electing all the members of the national board directly. They are co-equivalent with the local boards, and then those boards are electing amongst themselves certain committee members. So just to use your analogy of our governance structure in the U.S., that would be as though you voted for your Congress members, and your Congress members were then choosing the committee members of the various, or the people who sat on the various committees. So in that model, it is the case that the listeners are electing the national board members
directly
also directly, because they're all of the people who sit on the local boards are members of the national board, of the governing board of Pacifica. In David's model, again, in order to be elected to that national board, a member has to be elected by the listenership. So the listenership is electing everybody, and then the local boards who are elected by the listenership and the staff are assigning particular roles, particular responsibilities in the governance of the whole. So I think there is a degree to which that is addressed by the structure. Now, they're not elected. There's no election by listeners of the executive. So the analogy would be that it's Congress who's electing the president.
Okay, thank you so much, caller. You're listening to KPFK Los Angeles. My name is Rafael Renteria, and today I'm hosting KPFK Matters. With us in the studio are Dave Fertig of the Interim Pacifica National Board, who has a proposal for a new structure for Pacifica. Carol Spooner is on the line with us from Santa Rosa, California. She's also an Interim Pacifica National Board member with another proposal for revision of the bylaws. And Dave Adelson, former chair of the KPFK Local Advisory Board. The telephone number to call is 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. When we pick up your line, you're on the air. We're not screening calls at all. And on that note, we're going to turn to line one. Line one, you're on the air.
Yeah, greetings. I'm glad you're paying careful attention to the issue of recall and et cetera and who votes. And but here's what hasn't been said. Pacifica, bringing together differing communities and having them talk together. So before you get to recall, we need those issues that would go to recall to be discussed on the air in a format like you're doing right now. You know, that's the model we are supposed to be, that the mission statement is supposed to be demonstrating.
We directed such a question to Carol Spooner earlier in the conversation, maybe 25 minutes ago. Dave Adelson, what do you have to say?
I think that it should be in the bylaws that this kind of programming exists, because the first thing that anybody would want to do if they wanted to move the institution in a radically different direction without the oversight of the people who were, had been given that power, would be to claim that, for example, this is boring programming, which it may be. I mean, I have no idea how many people are listening or how bored they are, if indeed they are subjecting themselves to this. But I do think that it should be written into the bylaws that there shall be such programming on a monthly basis. I think that's very important.
Well, there's no question in my mind that we need to have, I mean, the way the hijacking was able to occur was by preventing people from coming on the air and saying what they saw happening in terms of the policies and procedures and practices of Pacifica. That's a lot of peace. But it wasn't very peaceful. And I think that we need to have that vent of information available to the public. And it's not so much a matter of, well, it's not entertaining radio or not. Who cares? It's a matter of public notice. It's got to be out there. And if to some people who are not interested, it's boring, well, so is the back of a public notice section in the newspaper. But it's essential to get the information out.
I just want to make one quick point, a little anecdote. When we were, I was talking to one of the other local advisory board members who was part of the lab lawsuit some years ago, talking about the necessity of programming like the caller just suggested. And her response, she's from WBAI, was that where would we find a half hour? And who's going to be willing to give up their programming slot for this? And it struck me that here we were talking about a program that was necessary for the proper functioning of the entire institution, and the thing that was making it impossible was that the political dynamic was so intense that you couldn't get any programmer to cede even a portion of their time for such a thing. I think that, you know, that is one of the places where it is a legitimate concern that we get a culture of democracy rather than a culture of selfishness.
That's the conservative trend that I was talking about from the staff earlier. Caller, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, and if that was addressed before, I didn't hear it. Perhaps you can write into the bylaws that programmers, when they're sign an agreement, that in the face of petition to address an issue, their rights are secondary to the listeners and the petitioners.
Thank you so much for your thoughtful call, and we're going to move on to the next caller. Thank you so much.
If I could just point out, Raphael, we need to be careful in doing bylaws that we not try to encompass every operational and procedural dynamic within the whole organization.
All righty. Line five, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to talk about an issue that was raised before but has not been emphasized, and I think it's really critical, and that is the issue of listener-sponsor ability to amend the bylaws. Because, you see, it doesn't matter which draft or combination of drafts get enacted initially. If we find that they're faulty in one way or another, there needs to be a process for amending them, and that has to be addressed right up front. so that the issue of listener referendums and listener ratification of either listener referendums or board-initiated amendment changes, I think, are really critical. Could the panelists please comment on that?
Carol Spooner.
Yes, in the bylaws draft that I have written, and I think Dave's is similar, although I'm not quite certain, the board can amend the bylaws by two-thirds majority, given 30 days' notice of proposed bylaws changes. Now, that board, in my draft, consists of the 90 members who were directly elected at the five station areas.
Well, that's not sufficient time,
Carol. No, I know.
Carol.
And just
nor
a moment.
Nor do the listeners have an ability to weigh in on that.
No, hold on a minute. I hadn't finished. Any amendment of the bylaws proposed by the board that affects the members' rights has to go to the members for approval.
Yes, but the members' rights are very limited.
On.
They're very limited under your bylaws.
Hold on a second. This is the way I envision it, and perhaps it should be spelled out more clearly. The way the KPFA local board operates right now is that it operates through a series of committees. We actually have 14 committees. Those committees are open to listeners to join, and they initiate all of the policy proposals. They come out of our committees that then go to the local board. I think that's a very workable system. It does put all of our committees are open, and anybody who's interested in a particular topic can come and raise the issue, and then the committee will consider it and work on it, study it, and come forth with a proposal that they then bring to the local board. Now, if I understand what you're suggesting that members need some way formally to propose bylaws amendments.
And to ratify other proposed bylaws amendments by other bodies.
Well, they are required to ratify any bylaws amendments that are passed by the board affect their rights.
Oh, yes, but see, that's very limited. The rights are very, very limited. Will you spell out the rights, please, Carol? It's simply
the rights to
elect the board, period.
And,
no other bylaws amendments have they got the right to ratify.
They have the right also to approve any change in the number of directors, the right to approve any change in the articles of incorporation.
Yeah.
And also under the law, they have the right to approve the disposal of corporate assets. The bylaws, though, the bylaws themselves don't set out very much else other than who the directors are and who elects them and who the members are and what their qualifications are and the relationship between the various committees. Most everything else that any board does isn't in the bylaws. It's in the policies and procedures that the board adopts. So the bylaws really don't tell us much other than who the directors are and who elects them.
If I may, I
don't feel you very.
This is this Dave.
The question.
This is Dave Adelson speaking.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Or not.
To tell you the truth,
you've answered the question, but you haven't addressed the issue that I'm raising.
Well, the issue that you're raising is one of listeners bringing initiatives to change the bylaws
and to ratify the board proposed bylaws. 30 days is certainly not enough, and there's no ratification process for the listeners to have a say on that.
What kind of bylaws amendments are you thinking the board could make? That's the question, because the only thing in the bylaws is how the directors are elected, what their qualifications are, who the members are, what their voting rights are, and who supervises what part of the organization.
Well, I'm not going to try to specify what might or might not try to be changed or added or deleted from the bylaws.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking about a process that needs to be implemented to give mm-hmm. listeners some rights beyond just voting on amendments that might affect their voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
If there were not, this is Dave Adelson speaking, if there were nothing else substantive in the bylaws other than those things that the listeners already had the right to vote on changes of, then there would be no problem with such a process, I wouldn't think. But, one of the experiences, as I understand it, in the referendum process in California was it was expected to be a great democratic mechanism, and it turned out to be a mechanism by which well-organized, well-funded groups could continue to throw propositions up, very often misleading propositions that constantly occupied activist groups in fighting them. I think there is, that's not to say that I don't think that it's not a reasonable approach. I think there is a mechanism for listeners, of course, to bring to the people they've elected demands that they that those members deal with or bring to the board certain proposals for passage by the governing board. But it is a problem if the listeners don't have the right of approval on some of these things. You may have a board unwilling to consider it when indeed the great mass of listeners would want to see that. But see such changes. But I think that you have to keep in mind that if it really matters to people, it may take a little while to push these things through. What's necessary is the ability of listeners with such desires to get on the air and communicate it to other listeners so that they can hold those elected representatives accountable to it, so that when elections come, these things become issues that candidates have to address.
Thank you so much for your call, caller. You're listening to KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, and we're going to take a quick break.